This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we talk with a New York playwright who brought a very unusual play to Port Townsend, a comedy about climate change. And, judging by audience reactions, that subject actually can be very funny. And now, we go inside the Compass. Henry Feldman is a playwright from New York and a passionate student of climate change. He combined his two avocations into a new play called Global Warming, a Comedy, which made its world premiere as part of Key City Public Theater's PT Playfest. The script was workshopped, which means it was performed multiple times as a staged reading. And after each reading, audience members and theater folks gave the playwright feedback. Feldman took many of those suggestions and revised the play several times in search of the perfect script. We spoke with Henry Feldman just prior to the final performance. So give us your elevator pitch for Global Warming, a Comedy.
A real estate agent, his client, a climate denier, and three climate researchers walk into a Miami hotel bar. Stop me if you've heard this one before. The client wants out of the beachfront condo. Yeah. The agent doesn't want to give up his commission. The denier says, hey, don't worry, be happy. And two of the climate researchers think they have the magic answer to global warming. And the third one knows everyone's full of crap.
Here's a small taste of the performance as actor Tom Chaloner portrays a real estate association president speaking at an annual dinner meeting with fellow agents in Miami.
I gotta tell you a joke. Stop it with the groans. How many Miami real estate brokers does it take to change a light bulb? None! Who needs light bulbs? We live in the Sunshine State! Now for a serious subject. As president of the Miami Real Estate Agents Association, I get many calls from the news media. They ask about sales, price trends, and where are the hot neighborhoods. But there is one question which only comes from those Northeast papers. Yeah. You know what that question is, right? Boxers or briefs? No, seriously. Good, I got you laughing. No. They ask the exact same question each time. Do I believe in climate change? Do I believe in climate change? Of course I believe in climate change. Every Miami real estate agent, hell, every Florida real estate agent believes in climate change. We all believe when, like today, it is 10 degrees in New York City, zero in Montreal, and minus 12 in Moscow. Those people need a climate change.
Climate change.
Yeah.
Climate change.
Agreed. Now it's a new year. Get out there and change the climate for those poor souls trudging through the snow and its sad, ugly cousin, slush.
And now, back to the interview with playwright Henry Feldman. You're billed as a New York playwright, so I was surprised to learn that you have a history with Port Townsend. Tell us about that.
Used to live in Houston, Texas, and the summer of 2011 was extremely hot. August was every day over 100. And we said, we're going to live in a place we want to live. And that was the Pacific Northwest. And we started looking around, found that Port Townsend had the theater scene, art scene, and it seemed like a natural fit. So yeah, we were here, but we have a kid in Queens and another one who's turned us into grandparents who lives in, of all places, Miami, and they travel from here, just got to be too much. Yeah, I saw that I was labeled a New York playwright, and I go, oh yeah, that's me.
Sounds impressive. And it is impressive. It's an impressive script that you've written here. What were the years that you were in Port Townsend, and then when did you go to New York, and why?
So 2012 is when we bought the house and moved up here. A few years later, we tried renting, subletting an apartment in New York City, And that was a lot of fun. And we thought for a while that we could split our time between here and the summers. I mean, how can you not love Port Townsend in the summer and winter in New York City, and which is not as bad as you would think. We tried that 2 years, and it was obvious it wasn't going to work, and so we decided to sell the house here. But, I mean, it's just gorgeous. I got here on Monday, and it was like the Chamber of Commerce said, don't you want to move back? I mean, it was just gorgeous.
You say that climate change is a topic in desperate need of some humor. How does one get laughs out of a serious subject like climate change?
That's a good question. I decided in September of 2015 that I should write a play about it. I have written two plays before that were both comedies. I like comedies. And I decided, what the heck, I should try to write something funny about climate change. And I threw the gauntlet down for myself. I gave it the title as the first thing. I gave it the title of Global Warming, a Comedy. And so sort of forced it upon myself. It took me 2.5 years to come up with a set of characters and a location that could drive a full-length script. I stumbled upon the fact that the only people that were having fun about climate change were the deniers. All you need to do is watch a video from the Heartland Institute, and they are just having a good old time. And I said to myself, huh, I need to remember that.
You're a playwright. Is that your career, or did you have a career in something else?
Well, from what I understand, there are maybe a handful of people that make a living as a playwright. I write computer programs.
Oh, okay.
I have a degree from Rice University in electrical engineering, but I do claim to have both halves of my brain. I took a dozen classes at the University of Houston in the School of Theater. I've always liked doing both things. So no, the day job is writing programs, and the intellectual exercise of writing plays is more difficult than I would have thought initially, but it's definitely a good challenge.
More difficult than writing programs, coding?
Oh yeah, no. It's programs don't wake me up in the middle of the night with characters who want me to write down their words with the fear that I'm going to fall back asleep and forget what they have to say.
Now, your play is being workshopped here as part of the Key City Public Theater Playfest. For those who have not participated or attended these events, can you describe the process, how it's been for you as having your play workshopped here?
Yeah, you know, it's just absolutely wonderful.
In what ways?
Well, as a playwright with a play that has seven characters in it, it's hard to get seven people together to read it. I mean, that's the first challenge. There's just this whole support staff. It's just absolutely wonderful to hear the words come alive.
My hunch is not just any playwright can get their script workshopped through Key City. Is it a competition? How did they pick you to be one of those in this process?
So the truthful answer is that I sent the script to Denise.
And it's Denise Winner, the artistic director of Key City Public.
When I first moved here, I noticed that like the next week they had auditions. And so I showed up to be an actor with an audition and got a part in the Summer Shakespeare Festival.
Oh.
And I've done two of those. And so I know Denise. And so I sent her the script just with the, hey, Denise, I would love to know what you think. A month later, she calls me up and she goes, we want to workshop it. And I'm going, oh, like, wow. So she made the decision, and I was the absolutely lucky recipient of her decision. So it wasn't a contest or anything. I will say that when you read things about how to be a produced playwright, they tell you to get to know people. I have submitted the scripts to contests where it gets rejected, and they send you this email, and they'll tell you that they received 1,400 submissions. And you go, oh my word, it's easier to get into Harvard than it is to get accepted into one of these contests. So definitely creating a relationship with a theater seems to be the way to get things done.
Have you found the process helpful in the workshopping of your play? And if so, in what ways has this been helpful for you as a playwright?
So that's interesting. Every time I finish a draft of the script, it's as good as I think I can make it. When I look at it, I go, I don't know how to make this script better. And then magically, something happens where I see an area where I can improve it. Like the first scene, Lenny was a stronger character. I decided to try him as a meeker person. The word I use is nebbish. So then I start typing that, and then all of a sudden it happens. And so that's happened now with four chunks of the script after each of the two rehearsals that we've had so far. But like I said, before I would do that, I thought it was the best I could do. But somehow through this process, it gets better. It's just amazing to me.
What surprised me about the process as I'm watching it happen is you are rewriting portions of the script on the fly after hearing some of the readings. Is that difficult to suddenly say, okay, I'm going to go with a different direction in this part or that part?
I don't know about other playwrights. I'm quite willing to chop away chunks of script. Actually, the change that was made for today's rehearsal on Thursday, I actually did it twice. I did it once Wednesday night before I went to bed, and I literally woke up at 2:30 in the morning and wrote another one of them for 2 hours and then went back to sleep. Mm-hmm. So, no, I have no problem just throwing out chunks of text.
What is it like as the writer where you create this story in your head and now you're hearing it come to life with real live people?
Since the actors have just started with a script, the honest answer is the first time through, it's frequently a disappointment. Because I hear the people just being very, you know, gallant, and they, you know, the words just flow off their tongue because they're all in my head. Mm-hmm. Whereas these people are looking at the words on the page, and they're also trying to figure out where to stand, who they're talking to. In this play in particular, it gets a little heavy with the climate science terminology because that's who they are. It all flows from my head into my internal ear. Today was the third rehearsal. I was just astounded. My baby had come alive.
Writers often think of their work as their babies, and they can be quite protective of them. Have you resisted any suggestions for changes in the script? And I know you've gotten suggestions from the director and from other people involved in the process. Have you taken everything they said and made the changes, or have you pushed back a little?
I am told, and I won't argue with this, that I have an exceptionally thick skin, that I work in service of the text. And if the text needs improvement, that's my job to improve it. I don't know if I should have said my baby. You know, I guess it's as a child has a bar mitzvah, you're proud, but it's also their deal. And so the script is out there. Every once in a while, there are things I don't let go of easily. They're usually very tiny points. Like I've had a software program that I sold in the late 80s. It went up against a Microsoft program. So I have this sort of personal grudge against Bill Gates. So there's a couple of disses of Bill Gates in the script. And Alan, the director, he's, you know, questioned me on them. And I'm willing to give those up if they don't get a laugh. They may not get a laugh in Port Townsend, given how close it is to Seattle. But if they don't get a laugh, I'm quite willing to give them up. I sort of take everything in and let it kick around. But I am not married to any particular piece of dialogue. This one, Global Warming, like I said, I set the title in September of 2015. This script didn't probably happen until January of 2018. So there was a lot of false starts. Once I got the characters going, I think I finished the script in 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah. But then there's like 3 months of sending it to people, getting critiques, and incorporating those. So yeah, I am all over getting comments. I may be really bad about it. I mean, even one of the production people, I go, well, what do you think? And you know, she says, well, it's your script. And I go, no, tell me what's wrong. Because I only have two ears and I think I'm biased and I need to know what other people think. I'll reject it if I feel like it, but I want to know what you think.
When, why, and how did you become passionate about the subject of climate change?
So that's sort of funny because I lived in Houston, Texas for 40 years. I did work for Exxon in 1982, and I have family members that are in the oil and gas business. And I think it really was the summer of 2011 when every day in August hit 100 degrees, or even one day hit 109. And then I think after that summer, we said, we need to be someplace where we want to be and not a place we just want to keep leaving. So I think it was 2011. And then I started doing searching for a group that I could become a participant in, and none of them really spoke to me. Even 350.org and a few others, I didn't feel like I could make a difference. And then being an engineer who also does theater, I've come to realize that engineers and scientists make, in the main, horrible communicators. But on the other hand, theater people that understand little things like beginning, middle, and end. I mean, we would have classes at the U of H, and we would have to put on like a four-minute scene. But it had to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Scientists don't seem to get that. The necessity for conciseness, for an audience to understand where it started and where it's going, is sort of lost on them. And you can see it with Beth in the script. She makes this recitation of facts, of dates, and she thinks the fact that those exist should be enough to sway people. But it turns out it's not. And I think they have a hard time getting past that. Whereas I think with theater and the arts, it's a different way. I mean, you don't see too many climate change plays out there, so.
I don't think I've ever seen one. Have you seen any play deal with this subject to any degree?
Well, so the Sunday before I got on a plane and generated CO2, we saw a play in New York City called Hurricane Diane, in which is about a butch lesbian sort of Dionysus character has come down to Earth and is trying to get these four New Jersey suburban homeowner women to do permaculture. So there is this undercurrent of climate change. My wife Nadine thought there was more of it than I did. And I think that's because my play is like so dense on the climate stuff. Not that it's not funny. There's nothing funny about climate change. I mean, there's a new book, Uninhabitable Earth, that just came out. I bought it. I can't read more than two pages at a time. It's just wall-to-wall depressing. But you're not going to get people into seats to watch something if it's just, you know, go home and curl up on the floor.
Yeah, in a fetal position. I'm curious if any of the characters in your play are based on any real people. Do any of the climate change researchers and deniers who appear in this play have real-life models?
So I'll answer that question two ways.
Okay.
One is there a climate researcher that the playwright is trying to give voice to in a theatrical form? That is definitely yes, and I'll give his name, Dr. Kevin Anderson. He's at the Tyndall Center at the University of Manchester. If you want to watch an hour of his video, you don't have to see my play. It's sort of that way. He's a very interesting guy. He stopped flying about 10 years ago. He even went to a conference in China. It took him 10 days to get there by train.
Wow.
And he said it was the most productive 10 days he's ever had in his entire life. No internet, no Facebook, just work on a paper. He pushes the idea of individual action, that there is a benefit to get people out of big cars into little cars, to get people to switch out their refrigerators for more efficient refrigerators. Because he points out that it's not just the energy driving your fridge, it's the energy that's lost in the transmission lines, it's the energy to at the power plant to make it, it's the energy to get the raw material to the power plant. So the 100 watts has a bigger cascading effect. So when I came up with the idea of writing a comedy, I stumbled upon the fact that climate deniers, they laugh. Yeah, all you need to do is watch Heartland Institute videos, and they're all over YouTube, and they're just having a good time because they don't care. There's no downside to them. If somebody offered them a private jet flight, they would take it without hesitation. Whereas a climate researcher would, oh, a private jet's nice, but on the other hand, I really should be at the back of the Spirit Airlines plane in my little cramped seat. So that's what that's one thing that I try to come out with in the play. So there is a whole group of deniers. But I will just say that as an example of a climate denier that is flamboyant and has a lot of fun, there is a guy from Britain, Christopher Monckton, and he's all over the YouTube also. He's just a lot of fun. He's not a climate scientist, but, you know, he's out there pitching, and he's just having a good time. As far as the fact that there are three women climate researchers, that's actually a bias on my part. When I was at the University of Houston in the theater department, I noticed that two-thirds of the people in classes with me were women. But when you look at scripts, they're only maybe one-third female. And so I thought to myself, if I write a play with several parts for women, I would probably be able to get a pretty good actress in there.
I found that humor can be an effective delivery system for an important message, but that seems to be lost on those who argue on both sides of the climate change debate. Why do you think the topic is so divisive and lacking in humor?
It's beyond lacking in humor. I have another climate change play that's set 30 years in the future. One problem with global warming, a comedy, is that the people on stage are not in the moment being impacted by climate change. And I wanted a play where climate change was going on at the moment. And I had been in contact with a professor at the University of Miami, and he sent me some documents on his work on potential sea level rise. And I realized that I could set a play 30 years in the future and have the people there actually being affected in the moment that they are on stage being affected by climate change. So I have that play. And then it occurred to me that I really needed to do a Christmas Carol approach, which is I have a climate change present, I have climate change future, so I need to have climate change past. So I started doing research on what we knew in the past. And what you find is that in 1982, Exxon was doing scientific research, and they had internal memos where they used the word catastrophic. One guy wrote a paper and he said that it's short of catastrophic. Another guy wrote a memo saying, I like your paper, except I have a problem with short of catastrophic because I think it's going to be catastrophic. And the dates they were talking about were 2030. So you have up until the early 1980s, basically no question about the validity of the science. There's no one going, it's not happening. Then you get to 1985 and the oil companies and people in government start realizing that the industries that are putting food on their table are in danger. And so they generate this humongous world of doubt. And it continues up until, I would say, just very recently.
When this program airs, the Playfest will be over, and you will have a, I presume, a somewhat different version of the play than when you arrived in Port Townsend. What are your hopes and plans for Global Warming, a comedy, when you get back to New York?
As I mentioned, you send plays off to these contests, and they get rejected because I think pretty much, you know, even if you're in the top 20, I think it's a random pick after that. I have a friend who's a playwright in New York City. He has decided to just ignore that whole approach and go after producers directly. As a matter of fact, on Monday, he's going to have a reading for producers. And in New York City, a producer is somebody with money. So he's trying to get money together. I have decided that I'm going to pursue getting this play out there, produced. My current thought is to try to get a small theater and keep it there for a while. I mean, I had a friend in Atlanta that it took him a month before he actually read this play because he's going, oh God, it's a play on climate change. And it's like, then he gets 10 pages into it and he goes, this is funny. So I think I need it to stick around, see if we can put together some money, but it's not going in the drawer. That's not happening. This is my way of making a difference with climate change. And I owe it to my kids, I owe it to my granddaughter to do that. I think the one thing I didn't mention was that when I said to myself, write a funny play about climate change, I thought to myself, Mel Brooks and the Producers. This is not to imply in any way, shape, or form that I am anywhere near that level. I will put my computer programming ability up against Mel any day of the week. But, you know, as far as writing funny stuff, I look at him and he made fun of Nazis. He did it more than once. And I thought, if he can make fun of Nazis, somehow I can get people into a theater to laugh about global warming. I'll also say that if you were to ask me what I want the audience to leave, I would say I want them to go home and look at Wikipedia. There's all this stuff in my play. There's carbon offsets are labeled a scam. So I want them to go home and go, oh, wow, it's not cut and dry that I just, you know, I spent $30 on a carbon offset and the world's balanced out. So if they go home and look something up, that's great.
With Henry Feldman, the New York playwright who premiered his comedy about climate change in Port Townsend, this is David Cunningham for KPTZ News. The Compass airs Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. with a repeat Saturdays at noon, exclusively here on KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend.